Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Monday. It is the 23rd of August, 2021. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Dave Hamilton. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're here. Also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Kelly.
So Brian will be back on the 8th with traffic and weather. But first, we're here to chat a little bit about a piece of legislation that could end up being very interesting. So Brian, I'm going to have you step us through this.
Well, the proposed legislation, and it has not only not been voted on yet, it's surely not an even close to a final phase to make it through a committee.
Right.
Right. So this is before we started recording. Thank you. Yes. you, Kelly, called it public beta, and it's really actually probably more like a public alpha. But, yeah. You know, the analogy is close enough. So essentially, Apple and Google would be forced to allow access to and installing from third-party app stores. Mm-hmm. And let's see what also, quoting from Andrew's article on this, open up competitive avenues for startup apps, third-party app stores, and payment services. That's important. Also, it's very important. Make it possible for developers to offer new experiences to take advantage of consumer device features. I don't even know what that means. And protect developers' rights to tell consumers about lower prices and offer competitive pricing, protect, and then also simultaneously protect the sideloading of apps. So in other words, both Google and actually not even just Google.
There are some limits here, some minimum customer size that are baked into this proposed legislation that effectively make it Google and Apple would be their app stores would be the targets.
What about like that Samsung who has their own, you know, proprietary skin? And
oh, that's stuff true. That they put on they top. Do have their own.
Do they have their own app store?
Yes.
I think they use the Google Play Store, right? Or does Samsung have its own app store?
I think there's a
Samsung
second
had its own app store, but I don't know if they still have their own app store. So that's a good question.
There's a minimum, and I think it's big, so it may not impact the smaller little app stores. Yeah.
Okay. So.
Yeah. Right. And so anyway, that's what the proposal. It's basically just trying to force Apple and Google both into opening up their platforms,
right,
to allow more stuff.
So
it's called the Open App Markets Act. So
yeah,
there you go. Yeah.
So this would be like, I know that this isn't quite the way they put it, but really what they're looking for is for your iPhone to work more like your Mac does, where you can install stuff from the App Store that's built in, and you can use that if you want to. But if you want to use something else, then you can go to a developer's website and download it directly and install that and move on with your life.
To be fair, let me fix that for you, Kelly. Much to Apple's chagrin, you can go somewhere else.
Well, yes, I mean,
because you know, they've been doing their best to limit our options to do even that, although those options have not been as of yet taken away.
Right. Yeah, you still can, depending on how many hoops you're willing to jump through on your Mac in order for things to happen. Gatekeeper and sandboxing and yeah. Signing and. So, yeah, there's. That's basically what we're looking at, though, is they want to be able to open it up so that your phone also, like, if you want to run something that's not necessarily in the App Store, that doesn't mean you're done. That means that maybe you would have a different avenue to install something like that and make it work is basically, like, it sounds like that's what they're trying to do.
I wouldn't even say basically. I would say that's exactly what they're trying to do.
Okay.
That's correct.
Yeah. All right. So
for one, I'll dive into this first. I, for one, have always chafed the limitations on my Mac, but have embraced the limitations that are on iPhone and iPad. And in part because I probably care. Oh, that's interesting. I probably care less about the apps that I put on my iPhone and iPad. And with the Mac, that to me, there's always been more interesting stuff that can be found out there. Now, that's subjective, and I may actually be wrong on that. And I'm not going to, like, you know, that's not going to be a hill that I'm going to die on. But that is the approach that I've had heretofore. I have also always appreciated the protections and security that comes from the wall garden aspect of what Apple does. And I have appreciated the lockdown nature of what's happening on my phone, again, in a way that I don't want on my Mac. And I resent these legislative attempts to force Apple essentially to make my device less secure. Although I will also acknowledge it's possible that Apple could allow these things with some kind of option that would then allow me to keep my phone within the walled garden if that's what I so chose. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot going for the status quo. There's also a lot going for not only developers, but for me with the way Apple forces developers to use their own payment system for in-app purchases. Right. I know that I never think even for a millisecond about the safety of making a purchase, an in-app purchase within an app on my iPhone or iPad. I don't ever think about it at all. And that's because Apple does force everybody to go through its system. Mm-hmm. The same thing with installing any kind of app. I don't think not thinking twice doesn't even begin to cover it. I do not think at all about installing something if it's coming from the App Store. I know that it's more or less been vetted. There obviously have been a few problems here and there. And I know that it is almost certainly going to be a safe app for me to install. I have benefited from that as a consumer, and developers who sell things on the App Store have benefited from me thinking that way. It's one of the reasons why I get so cranky about Epic, and it's bleeding about what's fair and nonsense. The App Store ecosystem that we know has benefited from being the walled garden, despite the limitations that come alongside with being the walled garden.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps you might even not say despite, you might say because of the limitations. I'm putting words in your mouth, but I'm about to try and take you.
Those are good words.
To try and take you off the hill. I've just been politely sitting on my hands here for a little while.
Yeah,
the hill that you said you didn't want to die on here.
I got a flag. I've got a flag planted.
All right. Well, we can leave the flag there and we can look at it from over here if you want.
Sure.
So you said you enjoy the options that you have on the Mac. You don't. You you enjoy what you have, and I'm paraphrasing. I didn't write down your thoughts. You write down your words. So, but it sounded like you were okay with the options that you have on iPhone, and okay with the options you have on your Mac. But that in that you aren't missing anything on the iPhone, and that's because you can't be missing anything because Apple's walled garden doesn't allow you to be missing anything. Right there, you have yet to experience what iPhone would be like.
That is correct.
Without this limitation, except you and I, and now I'm sort of talking about the royal you slash the royal we have experienced this when jailbreaking was far more of a thing that was necessary to do if you wanted to do really anything with your phone, right? I mean, remember there was no App Store at first, and then even after there was an App Store, there was a lot of limit. There was a lot more limitation than we have now. And so jailbreaking for power users was very much a necessary step to take. That Apple has removed a lot of those things so that we power users are far less likely to decide to want to jailbreak. Right. And still, there are things that can't be done on iPhone and iPad. For example, Brian, you and I might be able to join this podcast the way we are remotely using Discord from iDevices. There's really no way that Kelly could be hosting this podcast, recording us remotely, if she were just on an iDevice. So like that's a big one, right? Like there's yes. not a whole lot that can be done with core audio there. Mm-hmm. As far as I feel like we can't really say that we don't miss things that we haven't experienced yet, but maybe that's true for individuals, but as a people and as a user base, that's not really a fair place to start. We haven't been given the option to see what the other side is like to make a fair comparison. Right.
I completely agree with that. I want to make this point here that overall point that we don't necessarily know what we're missing is very valid. It doesn't change my mind.
Sure.
But it's a very valid point.
No, I get that. I get that. Yeah. The security of it and payments, you're absolutely right. Like that, having the convenience of payments being all through one party, not just in the app, but not just in the app store, but in the apps, super convenient. Right. And yeah. for all the reasons you mentioned, I agree with that. But security in general, there's a lot talked about here, and this is almost always where this argument comes to a head, right? It's like, well, but I want my iPhone secure. It's like, okay, let's rewind here and let's talk about where Apple's decision to make an app store came from. And it was far less at the time about security. It was far more about the practical matter of stability of your device. Now, it could be argued that malware could make a device less stable, and that's true. But it really was about the stability of non-malware apps interfering with each other. You know, we were coming from the world of really the Palm Trio as the smartphone that was configurable by users and had a fairly robust for the time app offering, right? And yeah. and so that's the world we were coming from, and it was a disaster to get your device with the apps you wanted to be stable. It took a lot of effort, and Apple reacted to that by saying we will have no third-party apps, right? And then obviously it evolved into we will walled garden the third-party apps that are there. But it was far more about stability than it was and battery life than it was about security at the time. Mm-hmm. And the devices have gotten a lot better. The CPUs in those things are way faster than they used to be. The batteries, much as we all love to complain about the batteries in smartphones in general have gotten way better, right? Like,
yes,
you know, can do a whole lot more. We'll still complain because we're people and, you know, we like complaining, but really it's way better than it was. And mostly though, to go back to Kelly's analogy that they want to make this more like the Mac, I think the Mac is an excellent platform to look at when we want to have the security conversation, because the Mac at its core is the same as iOS at its core, right? It literally is the same foundation of the operating systems that is shared between the two. And that includes things like the, you know, read only system volume that we now have on the Mac, right? That started on iOS. All of those protections that keep our Macs relatively problem-free from a security standpoint already are baked into iOS. So to me, you know, the comparison is often made with Android. Look at what can happen on Android. It's like, well, but look at what can and can't happen on the Mac, because we've been sideloading things. I hate this term sideloading. We've been sideloading things on the Mac for decades.
Ages and ages. Yeah.
Yeah. We just used to call it installing, and we still call it installing. Nobody ever talks about sideloading software onto their Macs. Although that's exactly what we're doing, because we have the Apple App Store.
Right.
And then we have apps that you can download from other places.
We have the internet. Like, if you want another app store, they're out there. Just go to the website and download the thing. And then some people want you to pay and some people don't. And that's all fine.
I always heard the term sideloading in reference to what carriers would do.
Mm. No, it's become, I mean, it's the term to like,
it is the term now, but wasn't that what it started out as?
Probably.
Carriers would sideload apps by and you know, oh, please let us return to those days.
Yeah. Which I mean, it could happen, right? Like you could get an iPhone with stuff put on it, but then hopefully be able to take it off. I look at the Mac, and yes, there are malware issues on the Mac, but I mean, I've been doing tech support my entire career, right? And I mean, for the last 16 years, I've been doing a podcast where I literally invite the internet to send me their problems with their Apple devices so that we can help solve them. And the number of people that actually have had malware, and I'm going to be really broad with this, like the people that installed a nefarious profile, right? I'll call that malware, you know, but those sorts of things, it's at best double digits over 16 years of doing this. And most of those were more than 5 years ago, right? And so looking at the last 5 years is the most relevant scenario to compare to, because that's where we've had all of these protections, and the gatekeeper on the Mac has really matured to a point. It's almost like Apple has been getting ready for this moment. Like we talked, you know, initially we Ted Landau coined the term the iOSification of macOS, right? And we've certainly seen a lot of that over the years. Features that start on iOS and then translate to the Mac. Well, Gatekeeper could easily be one of those features that goes the other way. It's already built, it's already road tested, and it works really well. So there are ways of creating, and I think we would see far less people sideloading onto their iPhones if this legislation or something like it were to pass than we even do on our Macs. I think most people agree exactly with what you said initially, Brian, and nothing about that changes, right? Like if they're not saying Apple's App Store has to go away. They're saying if this legislation came to pass, that Apple would have to not prohibit people or not make it difficult for people to install things. But it doesn't mean that the App Store still isn't the best experience there, right? And Apple's payment system for things in the App Store still isn't the best experience for payments. It's just some people will choose to sideload things, a term that I hate, but you know, it's efficient for this conversation.
It's the thing that, it's kind of what we're talking about. So I think
I just don't see it as this, it's not a binary thing, right? If this is allowed, each of the three of us here could, and perhaps even would, choose a different path from the others. And one of those paths might be, I'm only ever installing things I see in the App Store. And I think there's a lot of people that do that on their Macs right now too.
Yeah.
That may seem strange to the three of us because we each came from a world pre-App Store where you always sideloaded. So
there was no option. Like you couldn't even go in a store and buy Apple software most of the time. So
I like using the App Store. If an app is available there, I will.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of exceptions that come to mind, but by and large, it's like, oh yeah, that's great. Cause it's, you know, I think of it, it's a package manager, right? That's what the App Store is. If you go back to Unix land, you know, it's something that manages all the things you have installed in one place. That's super handy.
Yeah.
Super handy.
Yeah. I mean, the stuff, and like the stuff that I used to jailbreak for was all usability things anyway. So it was, I need to, like, I regularly need to turn on and off Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. And those were things that were virtually impossible on like phone OS back when that's what it was called. And those were the sorts of things that I was installing for. And like before you could put apps in folders, I liked doing that. So I was jailbreaking to put folders on my phone. And, you know, when those sorts of things came to iOS, I quit. Like that was, I want folders. I want copy paste. I want an easy way to turn the Bluetooth or the Wi-Fi on and off. And then those things came. And so I stopped jailbreaking because that's all I wanted it for in the first place. I wasn't doing anything particularly interesting otherwise with my device. I just wanted it to do what I thought was some basic stuff. And so Like, that's what I went for. And I think the piece of this that I think is probably what's torquing Apple the most is the part where it says, like, you can tell people about deals on stuff outside the App Store. Like, you could, you know, and you could potentially offer a different price and save money.
That's the one thing that I support on that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the fact that I could go to the web, buy my membership, and then sign in with my membership, and but apps developers can't promote that in any way whatsoever.
Right.
That's the one thing I would you know, if I could wave a magic wand and have change, that would be it. I hear your arguments, Dave. There's a lot of merit to your arguments. I don't think that legislation is the way to accomplish this. I also think that Apple has a right to run its platform the way it wants, as does Google. But that is certainly predicated in part on the fact that I'm okay with the way they've been doing it. If I like the way they did it, I might not feel the same way.
I agree. I don't like the way they do it. I would like more flexibility with my iPhone, but I don't want to have to jailbreak it. However, I completely agree with you that Apple shouldn't be forced to do this. I would just like for them to do this.
Right.
And this, you know, this proposed legislation brings up an opportunity for a conversation, but I'm really not actually in support of the legislation. I'm in support of something that Apple chooses to do that gives us the same net effect, if that makes sense.
Basically, well, I mean, we've seen that asking them nicely isn't working. Well, okay, I wouldn't say it was nicely. Epic asking them the way Epic asked them is not nice. It's not asking nicely. So
Epic may have asked behind the scenes. We don't actually know that, I don't think. They may have asked politely. Yeah. And it's possible this could be done in a way that would actually both leave, like, me happy and Dave happy, but also, you know, Apple, you know, the jailbreaker palooza person happy too.
Yeah.
Like, if Apple was allowed to do it as an opt-in kind of thing. So that
I think it should be an opt-in thing.
It's absolutely definitely. An opt-in thing. Yeah.
Legislation might not, but it might not allow that.
Agreed. Yeah. No, but I think it should be opt-in.
My device in the walled garden, I would choose to do that.
I think that should be the default, Brian.
Yeah.
I just think there should be a power. I would, and I, should is the wrong word.
Power user mode.
I would like the power user mode. That's right.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And I'm willing to sign away all of my, you know, rights to complain.
Yes.
But that's a big part of it for Apple is they don't want people talking about their negative experience with their iPhones. So they keep the walled garden in place. Chiefly for that reason.
Yeah, and you can't mess with the CSAT or whatever they call it, you know, whenever we hear about the scores on everything. So we'll have to see where this goes. Like we talked about, you know, this is sort of public alpha, as lots of legislation is. We'll see what happens with it as we find out more. We will obviously talk to you about it here. So thanks to Dave and Brian for coming by today. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I'll talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other. Let's be careful out there.